Blog Talk Radio.
Tonight is a particular honor for me because, let's face it, my presence on this stage is pretty unlikely. My father was a foreign student, born and raised in a small village in Kenya. He grew up herding goats, went to school in a tin roof shack. His father, my grandfather, was a cook.
Welcome to Current Events with Patrick Cook. I'm your host, Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas, as I do every Sunday at 4 p.m. Central Time, 5 o'clock Eastern. We are the number one resource for small business and nonprofits. To learn how you can showcase your business or nonprofit, go to our website at TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com for details. Man, we have another great show in store for you today. So sound the alarm. Get on Facebook, Twitter, Foursquare, or Tumblr. Send out emails and text messages. Call your friends and family and tell them to tune in right now to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. And for those of you that are listening via Blog Talk Radio, leave your comments. Click the follow button or follow me on Twitter. And that's at TaylorMade101. I'll be reading your tweets live on the air. And I also have a chat room open. Out there in the chat room, you can leave your comments or ask questions. So whatever your pleasure, chat room, Twitter, Facebook, or just plain old my bell, we want to hear from you. But first, let's take a look at the current events.
Greetings and salutations, everyone. It is good to be with you once again. And, of course, we have another great show in store for you today. So let's take a look at what's on tap. Today, we're going to talk a little bit about what's going on in the news around spanking in school. We want to know, is it time to let teachers or administrators spank your kids again, just like they used to back in the day? We're going to point to a Kansas lawmaker that wants to legalize spanking to the point of bruising children. Want to get your opinion on that. Also, Ole Miss frat suspended as they put a noose around the neck of a statue. We're going to take a look at also Dr. Steve Perry said that CNN asked him to shave his hair. What's this all about? And 12 Years a Slave, there's some talk about incorporating into the public schools high school curriculum. So we discussed this and much, much more. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. And joining me in the studio is the executive producer of Current Events and, of course, the chief operating officer of Cook Enterprises. You can follow her on Twitter, and that's AskJema. That's A-S-K. J-E-M-A. I introduce the some and present the others, no other than Jema Hill Cook. Jema, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Well, the pleasure is mine. So I want to get right to it. First up is it time to let teachers and administrators spank kids in school? And before I get to the story in News 1, I want to ask you first, were you spanked in school and what impact did it have on you?
I don't know if I was spanked, but I was tapped a few times with the ruler, or I may have had my ear pinched or my cheek pinched. But I do know back then, and I know you're trying to date me, but that's okay. They did allow paddling in school, but I don't think I ever got a paddling in school because I didn't want to get another whooping when I got home. So I was pretty good at school.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's interesting. most people, not excluding Miss Cook here, received some type of what they call back then corporal punishment. And I can tell you my experience was even in the I want to say the primary years, we were spanked. We were paddled in the primary years. And when I got to middle schools, there was a couple of different options that teachers would use. One, of course, we would get our hands spanked with a ruler in class, or we would get sent to the office if it was warranted more punishment than we received in the classroom, or the teacher didn't feel like doing it. But we would either get our hands spanked with a ruler, we would get spanked by paddle outside the classroom where everybody would hear it, or we would go to the office. And that was kind of the levels of punishment when it came to spanking in school. And so over the years, quite naturally, they have really taken it out of a lot of the states. Now, according to this news article, there's still about 21 or so states, 20 states or so that still permits spanking in school. So let me get to the article, the controversial article that's going on right now. And it is Representative Gail Finney, a Wichita, Kansas lawmaker, introduced a bill last week that would define corporal punishment and protect the rights of individuals who spank and leave marks on children from being charged with child abuse. The controversial move has sparked a heated debate, with opponents referring to the move as disturbing, according to the Wichita Eagle. Now, Kansas is one of 20 states that still permit spanking in schools. The proposed legislation would allow individuals such as parents, caregivers of schools, officials to hit children, including those students over 18 who are enrolled in high school. The current spanking law in the state, which Finney feels is not clearly defined, allows the acts sans and tailmate marks. So Finney proposed House Bill 2699 would more succinctly define corporal punishment as, and I quote, up to 10 forceful applications in successions of a bare open hand palm against the closed buttocks of a child. Now, House Bill 2699 would also permit reasonable physical force in order to restrain a child during a spanking, acknowledging that redness or bruising may occur on the tender skin of the child as a result. Now, the bill does draw the line on such disciplining tactics as striking a child with fists, a belt, or a switch about the head or torso. Now, many who oppose spanking believe that the act is ineffective, antiquated, and can actually foster aggressive behaviors in children. John Valusek, a retired Wichita psychologist and teacher who vehemently opposes spanking, has led a campaign against the act for over 10 years. John thinks spanking is not only unnecessary but damaging to young ones, saying if you hit kids when they're small, for whatever reason you're hitting them, you're planting the idea that it's okay to use pain to accomplish an end, he said. So, Jima, what's your take on corporal punishment? And I want to break this up into two facets. One facet is corporal punishment in schools, and then the other one is corporal punishment at home, or the same type of punishment at home, i.e., should you spank your kids at home, and should kids be spanked in school?
Okay, so let's unpack all this, because I think where she made, Representative Finney may have made a mistake, in my opinion, is she made it very broad, in a sense. And by that I mean, yes, I think as a parent, you should have a right to discipline your child in the way and manner in which you feel and deem it to be appropriate. Understanding where the line is in terms of what's going to be considered abusive and what's not. Now, because we all come from different backgrounds, different values, different beliefs, different religions, there has to be some sort of balance and there has to be some sort of standard. Some will say never hit. Some will say find what you can and hit them with first. So there, but somewhere in the middle of that is where we have to find ourselves. I think when a child is disciplined at home and then that child feels the need to go to school and say he's been abused or she's been abused, and then you're calling social services into that home, that's what causes confusion. Because I ought to be able to discipline my child, and my discipline them is not abusive. So if my child wants to come in all hours of the night and be disrespectful and violate the rules of the house and I have my belt and give them a whooping, I should be well in my range to do that. Now, I would probably leave a mark, but that mark doesn't mean I was abusive to my child. But then for my child to go to school and tell the school counselor that I'm abusing them and then go through this whole process of what that means and then be investigated and have my job called and maybe lose my job because of the investigation, only to find out, oh, it wasn't abuse, that's where we have to find the middle ground at. And I remember, you know, my nephew tried to do that to my mother when we were raising him. He wanted to call the police because my mama gave him a whooping. And my mama told the police, you can take him because he's not going to be up in here doing anything he wants to do. So if he's going to abide by the rules, you're going to take him where you need to take him to. So there has to be a balance there. And I think when it comes to, it's unfortunate that everybody don't know the balance. Everybody's psyche isn't wired to think appropriately at all times. And so because of that, the law has to step in and provide the balance. And, as you know, for a country that all of a sudden wants less government, areas in our lives to involve the government. But, you know, for some reason, we can't seem to find our way out of that either. But I think on one hand, parents should have a right to discipline their children in such a manner that the child understands what they were disciplined for. Every time I've had to spank my child, I go back. I don't do it immediately. I go back after the crying is over and the sadness is over and we're in a whole other spectrum, and I say, now, why did you get a spanking earlier today? And if he's able to tell me why he got that spanking and what he learned from that, then I know that's probably the one thing I won't have to give him a spanking for again, because he didn't like how that felt. So I think you have to be able to balance it all out. As far as teachers, they have so many other things to do nowadays in the classroom. They're teaching our kids way more than what they should because of how our kids are coming to school unprepared. Adding that to their list of things that they have the ability to do or the right to do, I don't know. I mean, because, you know, we can't make the assumption that all of them would be fair and balanced either. Because we've seen instances where they've not been fair, where they've not shown good judgment either. So either way, the law still has to be there to provide the structure and the balance for it.
You know that's interesting. I want to kind of address all the issues that you brought up. There were so many, starting with religion, the fact that people always talk about spare the rod, spoil the child, coming out of Proverbs 13:24, and people use it all the time to as a way to say, I'm going to spank my child, I'm going to discipline my child, because if I don't do it at home, just as you indicated, they're going to get in trouble out in the street, so they're going to act up elsewhere. And so, in your opinion, do you believe that since they've really taken the discipline out of the home, we found to have more issues with our children in public, out in public, because they do, you know, they say, you know, you can't spank your child, or you can't do this, or you can't do that, and you're abusing your child. They acted up out in public, and you spank them. People want to call the police on you, and things of that nature. And when you do that, you don't have the authority or the ability to discipline your child. Do you think there's any correlation between that happening nowadays in the last two decades or so, and the enormous amount of increase in violence among kids and behavior problems that we're having in schools?
I think it's all interrelated. And by that, I mean, when you take a look at abuse is not just physical. So let's say I never put my hand on you, but everything I say to you is negative, and every word I use to you is thou, and I'm cussing you out, and I'm calling you every name but the name that I gave you. That is just as damaging as me taking my hand and popping you on your hand. That is just as damaging, because those scars we can't see, but those are the ones that the person feels the longest. And so when you talk about, and when you look at all the things that happened in our schools in terms of school violence and things that have happened over the last couple of decades, those people that have been responsible had a lot of abuse that was happening, but it wasn't physical abuse. A lot of it was emotional abuse. And so because of that, then they lashed out the only way they thought they could get seen and get the attention, and then that was the physical part of it. And so we have to know that not being able to discipline our children going on in larger society. You have a group of people that grow up thinking that there are no consequences for their behavior, and that's just not true. So we're not equipping them for real life when we don't provide consequences. And you have to up the ante on the consequences. That's just like as an employer, and I'm dealing with an employee. Okay, well, the first thing I'm going to give you, you know, it might be a verbal reprimand. The second thing I'm going to give you, it might be, a written reprimand of what we talked about. The third thing I'm going to give you, I'm at each stage, graduated sanctions, I'm giving you something more based on that same behavior. And so at some point you're going to realize, hey, I better get together. I'm not going to have a job. At what point do we do our graduated sanctions with our children where we show them at some point there's a real, natural, logical consequence for this behavior? You can take this spanking right now and get it over with, but be hurt for about 30 minutes, depending on the severity of it, or you cannot have A, B, C, and D. And I think they work in tandem. I don't think it's an either-or, in my opinion, because I am a product of an environment where I did get spankings. Not a lot of them, because, as I stated earlier, you know, it wasn't necessarily needed. I'm the youngest of seven, so I saw, because I was the youngest of seven, and I saw my older siblings get whoopings all the time, I kind of made a decision pretty early. I don't really need to get a whooping to understand. I don't need to do that. But if you don't have that example in front of you, then you might need to get it. And yet, but there has to be a balance. I remember when I got to the point where my mama said, I'm no longer whooping you. Everything now is going to be a consequence. You're going to be, you're not going to have something that you want. You're not going to get to do something. You're going to be put on punishment. No TV, no phone. You can't go to the basketball game. You can't go here. If you keep violating this rule, this is what's happening. So at some point, you know, that's what eventually should happen. But all homes don't grow up like that. All families aren't all well put together, not like mine was. But some people don't know the balance. And I think we have, as a society, we have shortchanged ourselves because we allow other people to tell us what to do with our kids when we know what's really in the best interest of our child. And so no one's going to be able to tell me I can't spank my child. I'm not gonna abuse him. I'm not going to we gotta go to the hospital. That's not gonna happen. But he's gonna fear me. He's gonna fear God. He's gonna fear his father. There has to be a point of fear. These kids nowadays have no fear. So when you talk about corporal punishment, that's the surface stuff. That's the I got a headache, but I don't really know that I'm really about to have an aneurysm. You know. That's the surface. The back part of that is what else is going on underneath that we're not taking care of the business we need to take care of.
So the issue really is, and I know this is what people are highlighting, is spanking. Spanking is what they're highlighting, but the real issue is discipline and abuse. I mean, those are the two underlining things that needs to be addressed. How do you discipline a child for a specific behavior, and then what's the point of abuse, right? And because you mentioned earlier in your description of how people were spanking and what they were using to spanking, and it's unfortunate that backgrounds, you mentioned religion, you mentioned cultures, and people have this line that they cross based on their upbringing and based on what was done to them. And in some circles, it can be seen as abuse. In some circles, it can be seen as normal. And so the issue here is more or less around discipline, the right discipline, the to fit the behavior, and what is the level of abuse? Because you also mentioned the fact that we're not just talking about physical abuse, because if a person acts up and you discipline them, you can actually mentally abuse them or verbally abuse them and not lay a finger on them.
Correct.
And that's a measure that I think is probably a broader picture that that the society is not addressing. And then it goes to the issue that we just talked about as far as, you know, if you're not going to be able to discipline them in the right manner or the appropriate manner or the accepted manner, and then you don't abuse them, then you're going to be able to get the right behavior out of them. And that's a learning process. People, because mm-hmm. just because it was done to me doesn't mean it was done right. You know, just because my mom beat the living stank out of me doesn't mean that I should be doing the same thing for other kids, for my kids, for somebody else's kids. And just because I got disciplined in school through paddlings, and you know, there were few occurrences. You know, maybe once every 6 or 7 years I would get in trouble for something, but very few and far between. But still, it happened. And because it happened,
right,
doesn't mean necessarily that I have to go out and do the same thing, because there are other ways, more effective ways, to alter behavior, because that's what we're trying to do, and not be able to do exactly what we just talked about, not be able to abuse the child, and also to be able to discipline them so we can alter their behavior. You had a comment?
Right, and I think the other thing when we talk about discipline is that it's not just about we talk about the physical part and the emotional part of that, but the other part of it is that when you're disciplined, it's in response to a negative behavior. So if I'm disciplining you for doing something wrong, then it's connected to that behavior. If it's not connected to a behavior, that's when it becomes abusive. If I just wake up in the morning and decide to just go in the room and slap you upside your head 12 times for no apparent reason, that's abusive. My discipline has to be in response to a behavior that I want to see change. Either you are being disrespectful, you're not keeping up with your items, you're not keeping up with your you're getting bad grades in school, you know, whatever it is, it should be in a response to something. When it's just willy nilly and I just woke up in the morning and you have no clue as to why you just got popped upside the head, then we can talk about that being abusive. Which is why I said I always go back to my son and say, why did you get a spanking? Because if he doesn't know why, then I need to tell him why. So he doesn't think he just got popped for no reason. He needs to know, well, what were you doing when I did that? And then we have a conversation about it. And I know a lot of people think, well, I'm not going to talk to my child about why he got spanking. Well, you probably should in this time. Maybe when we were growing up, our parents didn't talk to us about why they did to us some of the things they did, which is why some of us don't know how to handle our own children. And so you have to do better than what was done to you if it caused you any harm. So you got to be able to find a balance in that.
You know, I also want to add to that the fact that every behavior shouldn't warrant a spanking. Right, I mean, you know, if a child goes out and does something, or an adolescent goes out and does something, everything shouldn't warrant a spanking, right? Something should warrant a lesser punishment. That's why it's termed, at least in school, that is corporal punishment. It's supposed to be something of substantial fault or error that happens that warrants that type of punishment. But when we get into the habit of spanking a child for everything that they do that's wrong in your eyes, then I think that's also abusive. What do you think about that?
I agree. I agree with that. There has to be a balance. Every discipline shouldn't be a physical discipline, just like every discipline shouldn't be a verbal lashing. You know, so you have to know, is this something that needs to be, I grab his attention immediately, or does he need to know that for the next week you don't get TV? Which one? Because if I've already spanked you for it, now my graduated sanction is now you on punishment, now you on restriction. You know, we say, you know, the new word now is restriction because they're negative. So now we say you're on restriction. And so restriction from those things you know means the most near and dear to his heart. And so you take that away for 2 or 3 days or a week or however long you do it. And so, and even at that juncture, if it's too long, it loses its effectiveness. So you got to make sure that even in doing that, that that at the end of the day, you're going to get out of it what you want it to get out of.
So let's take it back to school, because the context, at least my comments were at home, and at least the graduated scale and things of that nature. At school, you mentioned the graduated scale. So what do you think about the issue of color on your skin? I think she mentioned, you know, it should not leave a mark, spank and leave a mark. So how do you take that language, leaving a mark?
Well, I think that was, and when I first heard about it and read about it, I must have misinterpreted, because I thought she was, the initial part of it was to allow parents who did happen to spank their child, and if they did leave a mark, that they wasn't going to be deemed to be abusive parents. And I think I think that does need to be clarified, because me leaving a mark, that mark could have happened accidentally while I was spanking you. It doesn't mean that it was intentional just because I left the mark. So, you know, that part has to be identified as well.
So are you okay with the bill? Would you be for it?
No, not how it's written. I think it's too broad in its scope in terms of what she was trying to accomplish, and they're not going to pass it there now anyway. I think the House representative, a head person there from the Republican Party, is kind of looking at some different things. So I think that they will have to rethink it. But she's called some good dialogue, though. You still do have, like you mentioned in the opening, 19 states that still have it where it's okay. So I think it creates a good dialogue.
I do, too. All right, it's time for a quick break, and when we return, I want to talk about another good dialogue, and this is something that's going on in Ole Miss, down there where they're hanging nooses around statues. So I want to talk a little bit about the statue of James Meredith and this noose hanging around his neck at the University of Mississippi. Well, Ole Miss, that is. You listen to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Be back in a moment.
You are listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas. My mom and dad will be right back after these messages.
Cook Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our companies, Tailor-Made Training and Consulting, Current Events, and Ask Jima, can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for a discounted book for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Thank you for your call. Let me read you a couple of my Twitter family, and then I'll have you respond, Dr. Hutchinson. But I want to read the first one from one of my best Twitter family members, Ask Jima. And Ask Jima says, Reverend Al, today is my birthday, and I'm sitting in Barnes & Noble Starbucks watching you online, driving people around me crazy, and I want to wave at her and the folks she's driving crazy and wish her a happy birthday on her 21st birthday. That's my friend, and of course, my East.
Need a new website? Haven't figured out your social media strategy? Are you finally ready to tweet, post, or blog? Well, look no further. Go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. We are the number one resource for small businesses and nonprofits. We're a full service, interactive consulting firm specializing in social media marketing, web design, technology workshops, as well as leadership and management training. So go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. Google me.
Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. Press 1 to talk and 2 to listen. I want to talk a little bit about what's happening in Ole Miss. Another great article in News 1 that's entitled, Ole Miss Frat Suspended. New Suspects Kicked Out. In Oxford, Mississippi, a fraternity chapter at the University of Mississippi was indefinitely suspended Friday by its national organization, and three of its freshman members were kicked out because of their suspected involvement in hanging a noose on a statue of James Meredith, the first black student to enroll in the then all-white college. In a statement, Sigma Phi Epsilon said it suspended the Alpha chapter at the university, and the chapter voted to expel all three men and turn over their identities to investigators. Now, police said on Sunday, found a noose tied around the neck of the statue, along with an old Georgia flag with a Confederate battle emblem in its design, which has since been updated to exclude the emblem. When Meredith tried to enter Ole Miss in the fall of 1962, Mississippi's governor tried to stop him. That led to a violence on the Oxford campus. Now, U.S. Attorney General Robert Kennedy sent 500 U.S. Marshals to take control, and days later, Meredith was allowed in school. Though he faced harassment, he graduated a degree in political science. Najima, I know this is near and dear to your heart because a similar story happened out in your parts of the country. What do you think about, A, the fact that they would hang a noose in this day and age, and B, the repercussions behind the issue?
Well, I'm thankful and grateful that they moved swiftly to find the people that did it and hold them accountable and responsible. Those people may be on the lookout, because I believe the Department of Justice is investigating this as to whether or not it could be considered a hate crime, even though it wasn't against a person. But what they did and how they did it. So they might, you know, think the consequences here might be more than just suspended off of the campus indefinitely. And I wonder what other university will now take them in as students, that we live in such a society in such a time as we do now, with our president being who he is and some of the things he's done, that we have to endure such blatant racism and such blatant hatred. There's nothing ever been funny about a noose. Nothing about that speaks of anything that remotely should make anyone want to laugh. And so, to have that happen, that speaks to the core of who that person is and what they stand for. And so, if you do it, I mean, it's just like the same thing that happened down there with the young men for the Gen of Six. You know, what eventually happened down there was a noose was hung on a tree, you know, a tree that the, you know, kids of color, the black kids normally hung out at. And why are we still having separate trees? But that's a whole nother conversation. So the fact that we're in this time where so much hatred has been ginned up by media, by talk show hosts, simply because of the president, because we can say that some of these things happened under Bush or under Clinton. We'll just go with those two because those are our two most recent presidents. But they didn't happen so frequently, and they didn't happen in places like they're happening now. So it begs one to question, are they happening more now because of what we have allowed the media and people that get up on television and say all sorts of evil and manner of things against the president based solely on race? Is that the reason why people now feel so comfortable just come out and say whatever it is they want to say and do whatever it is they want to do? And that's a question that I don't think a lot of people want to answer, because that requires us, as we talk about often, to peel back the layer and not just deal with the surface.
the surfaces, but why would you do that? What in your person, in your belief system, in your value system, ever told you it would be okay to hang a noose around the neck of the first African-American that was allowed to attend that university and the history behind it? It was so much history that he has a statue. He has a statue right there in the middle of campus because of what it meant to the state of Mississippi. And so what made you think that would be okay and that it would go unnoticed and it would go unpunished? What told you that? So that's the layer we have to get to. We know they did it. We know who did it. But what made you think that was okay?
So I want to dig a little bit deeper because I think there's an important issue that you raise right there about their what's in their psyche, what's in their morals or ethics that would make them do that. So my question to you then is the Caucasian race the only race of people that continue to conduct themselves in this manner? Is there a psychological inadequacy that they're met with or faced with or they're dealing with that cause them to continue to conduct themselves in this manner? And is there other race of people that does this? I mean, why would they continue to – why is this continually to be reported in so many different instances? So I want to get to, you know, is it just them or is it others? Is there a deeper problem here? And because I don't hear any other race conducting themselves in this behavior, unless, of course, is you know, we're talking about, you know, Al-Qaeda and Jihad and all those people that they kill each other all the time. You know, but when it comes to this particular issue of killing another race in record numbers, of hanging nooses on the neck, of treating them a certain way, reaching out, lashing out to the president – I mean, all of these things, is there something I'm missing?
Okay. So, no. The short answer is, no, you're not missing anything. It's not that it's not being reported. It's not happening. And if it is happening, we would have heard about it by now. I think because the history of America is so deeply tied to the rights of African Americans and how the enslavement of African Americans in this country by the hands of whites, and not just the physical enslavement, but also the psychological enslavement that happened as well, that we fought. And people often talk about, you know, what happened with Native Americans, and I agree with that. But the fight that we took to the very core of America happened with black people leading that charge. And so many other groups of people and gender benefited from the fight that we took, you know, the lives that we lost, the leaders that we lost, the families that were destroyed because of assassinations is long and wide. The countless people that whose names we don't know, who sacrificed their very life for the moment, for the movement, for the cause, for justice. So when you think about all of those things and you put all of that in there, and then you have people like Michelle Bachmann, who earlier this week made the statement that America's not ready for a female president, although she ran for president twice, I believe, and yet also that they nominated to have Sarah Palin on the ticket to be one heart breath away from being president had something happen to John McCain. Now all of a sudden we're not ready for a female president, and now all of a sudden that the president was only elected because of white guilt, that white people felt guilty for everything they had allegedly done to African Americans, so they went out and voted for him. So you have people like that who can make statements like that, and then you look at all the different things that have happened since he was nominated. We don't have to go back to since he was elected, but since he was nominated, we got to go all the way back there to 2007 when everything was wrapped. He and Hillary, and even you know people in the Democratic Party were saying some crazy things, racial things that were divisive. and they kept us on edge to see what was going to happen. And then when you have so many things happening that if it's not racism, it is sure sitting at the table of it. And if you have to always question whether or not it is, that's just as tiresome. And so what makes them do it is that I think it is a matter of self-hate that they have for themselves. They feel as though something has been taken away from them, and nothing has ever been taken away from them. I'm not really sure where they get this victimization from. When everything they have, they took from somebody else. I don't understand that. What is it that man stands for? And I'm speaking of James Meredith. What does he stand for that you lack in yourself that you felt like that's what you need to do? Because I think when you do things like that, there's something lacking in you that you feel like you have to go and lash out on somebody else because of something that you're inadequate in. That's about the only way I can answer that.
You know, I'm glad you mentioned that because I was having a conversation over the last couple of days with a young man, and I was trying to just kind of let him know that when you're having a dispute or a conflict, especially with someone that's close to you, even if it's not, the first thing we should do is to look within. Stop pointing the finger at that person and say, hey, it's your fault, this, and don't do this, don't do that. The first thing we should do is look within. For example, I gave the example of or the analogy that how would I look telling my neighbors not to cut their grass if I haven't cut my own grass? How would it look if I tell somebody else to go out and lose weight or get on a diet and be healthy, and I haven't taken the time upon myself to eat right, to lose weight, to look well, and to do those things. And so it's unfortunate that when we go out and lash out at, when I see these stories of people lashing out at other people of other races, especially when it's white, black, and we have so much history, is why don't we just get together and clean up our own house first? Why don't they take care of their own selves first before they start lashing out at anybody? Because there's enough to do on your own. That's enough for me to do, other than worrying about what somebody else is doing. And to have so much hate and vitriol, especially about somebody that was, not even here today. I mean, there's a statue of the guy. I mean, he has done nothing but to provide opportunities for other African Americans to attend college of higher education, to better themselves, to be productive in society. And yet these young men go out and place a noose around the neck of James Meredith at Ole Miss and then go out to put this Confederate battle emblem this Georgia flag on it. I mean, to me, that makes no sense for a person to go out and do that. Just doesn't.
Right, and it's, as we say, it says more about them than it does. Of course, James Meredith in his memory, because what it showed once again was, here's a man that stood up to the system and said, no, this is where I want to go. You're not gonna regulate me to some other school. This is the school I want to go to, and so this is where I'm going. And Jay, you can prove to me that I should not be here because I meet the grade, I meet the qualifier. I qualify to be here. I'm going to stay here. And so because of that fight, that spirit that he had, I think that's what made them do what they did, because it reminds them of their own inadequacy.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, we're going to take another quick break. When we return, you'll hear more with current events with Patrick Cook. Be back in a moment.
Cook Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our companies, TaylorMade Training and Consulting, Current Events, and Ask Gina, can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for discounted books for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Current events with Patrick Cook is joining the fight with First Lady Michelle Obama to help feed hungry children and stop childhood obesity. During the school year, many children receive free and reduced price breakfast and lunch as a result of the school breakfast and national school lunch programs. However, when the last bell sounds, marking the end of the school year, for many, it marks the beginning of hunger that will plague them throughout the summer. Here at Current Events, we're going to fill that nutrition gap and make sure children can get the nutritious meals they need. To learn how you can help with this worthy cause, go to TaylorMade101.com and click on Hunger Free. That's TaylorMade101.com and click on Hunger Free.
Thank you for your call. Let me read you a couple of my Twitter family, and then I'll have you respond, Dr. Hutchinson. But I want to read the first one from one of my best Twitter family members, Ask Jima. And Ask Jima says, Reverend Al, today is my birthday, and I'm sitting in Barnes & Noble Starbucks watching you online, driving people around me crazy. And I wanted to wave at her and the folks she's driving crazy and wish her a happy birthday on her 21st birthday. That's my friend. And, of course, my
stay tuned. We'll be back with more of Current Events with Patrick Cook. Patrick Cook.
Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. Now, Jim, I want to talk a little bit about another story that's in the news, which was interesting to me and kind of odd. And this is the one about educator Steve Perry. Now, educator Steve Perry joined Roland Martin briefly on News One Now last week, and the two talked about images of black beauty and connected over both being asked by CNN to cut their hair when they were contributors to the network. Now, he said, we went through it on CNN, Martin said to Perry, when they were trying to change how a brother looked, how a brother talked. Folks were trying to get you to change your hair. Now, Perry quickly backed up Martin's claim, literally asking me to shave my hair, he said. Now, Jim, what do you think about that? I know we played the song I'm Not My Hair, but what is going on here? I mean, why would CNN do that?
Well, because they CNN, and they're trying to find a way to control people at every level. It's not, I mean, it happens all the time. I mean, that's probably happened more often than what we know. And the fact that he's free enough now to say something about it after he probably done doing more work with CNN. But, you know, it's sad. You look at the number of African Americans that are no longer at CNN and what they've gone on to do since they left that network. And then you look at the ones that are still there and you know, they all kind of look alike, so to speak. But I'm not surprised.
I know, but
by,
you know,
cause I mean,
I've been saying, you know, T.J. Holmes and what's the other guy?
Don
Lemon. They look exactly alike. I mean, you know, I mean,
right.
And I'm saying to myself, what is the deal here? Now, come to think of it, the other guy that hosts a show on the weekends, he got a low haircut the same way. So, I mean, are they trying to shape the image, or I mean, what do you think is happening here? Why would an organization do that when most companies are celebrating diversity, diversity of thought, diversity of position, things that you do differently. I mean, why would they do that, at least to the African-American males?
Well, I think, you go into the stereotype, you know, and it's been said that the whole facial hair is intimidating on men of color. So you see a lot of them. I don't know if many men of color.
But Melissa got it all kind of hair.
Yeah, but I said men of color. I didn't say Wolf Blitzer.
This is true.
See, that's the difference. That's the difference. I mean, and so if you can play in that space until something better comes along, then by all means, play in that space. But know what your limits are. You know, don't try to go in pushing the envelope when they ain't already told you what the expectation is. Now, if I walk in with my fro and you hire me with my fro, then you should expect to see my fro. Because I walked in with it. So it's not like all of a sudden I became natural and now you got a problem with it. So if I walk in with it, then this is just who I am. And so the process and the problem becomes, you know, when people begin to change themselves because of their own internal struggles they're dealing with and the networks are not overly pleased with that change. Or the network feels as though this is the type of person that is pleasing to our audience, and so this is how we want the people who is giving the news to look based on whatever poll, research, focus group they've done on their own channel as to what people look like. I don't know. I mean, look at the diversity
of women and look at the diversity of Caucasian men. I mean, they have all kinds of different appearances, glasses, beards, goatee, you know, hair, no hair. I mean, so you have a diversity on that side. And so what's the big push for African-Americans to look alike? Because basically when I look at T.J. Holmes and the other guy, they look exactly alike. It's unclear to me why would an organization do that. I mean, you know, it's one thing for one person to say it, I think, has a lot of credibility, but to also back it up, you know, as Dr. Perry backed it up, that just goes to say, you know, what's going on here? But it also begs the question, why are we not starting to establish our own media outlets, our own media sources? I mean, it seems like we should have enough capital nowadays to go out and say, okay, we need to start now competing with CNN, competing with Fox News to deliver the type of news that cater to what we want to cater to be able to look how we want it to look, to appeal to our audiences, as opposed to, you know, people regurgitating the same thing they hear from Fox News. Because that's what happens. Fox needs to lose. Fox News leads the news, and everybody else repeats what they say all throughout the day, which is really unproductive. And it really keeps people at that low information voter stage or status because they're not being informed. We're just repeating what the Republicans are saying off of Fox News, or we're just repeating what we hear some other news organization say. There's no real stories being presented on a daily basis.
Well, and I think that's where the beauty of what Roland is trying to do with his show, on TV1 that comes on, is that he does talk about issues that are germane to the African American community, and so that's just one. And I heard yesterday as I was driving around, and forgive me, but I was listening to Travis Smalley. He had a guy on.
Yeah, all your points gonna be taken.
I know, but I'm gonna get them all back with this piece of information though, because there was he said at this time, based on the report that came out in 2011 or early part of 2012, there are no longer any black-owned radio stations. Zero. Zero.
That is wow.
Yeah. And so, and a lot of it has to do with the FCC and how they've allowed these mergers to take place. And it's hard for those small companies to compete with the advertising dollars that's out there. And so they've either collapsed or they've had to sell themselves out because of lack of, you know, so they had to go on and get bought out by a larger company. And it's just, there isn't any. So here we sit in the 21st century with all that we've accomplished, and how we got here was on the backs of a lot of what those black radio stations did back in the day, just with our music, with our history, with telling our story. And here we are in 2014, and we do not have one, not one. You know, that's really sad.
Yeah, it really is. And I wonder, does that create an opportunity now for us to try to get together and consolidate to merge, to try to, you know, acquire or to do something along this line. Because if you cut our communication channel off, I mean, it's a wrap. You know, that's the one thing.
The thing about it is,
that's one thing that military people do a lot of cases. They cut your logistics off. They cut your food supply, your water supply, and your communication. That's
right.
It. You can't do anything.
Well, the thing about it is we can't be happy with just one. I mean, so Roland has his on TV1. That shouldn't stop the news stations. I mean, you have the Bounce TV and the Aspire and Magic Johnson's channel, you know, all those things. It shouldn't stop anybody else from having a daily news program just because we have one. Because just as many as there are, we have different trains of thought. You know, we don't all agree on everything. And it's not as if all the stations, you just said this, everybody follows one other network. Everybody on TV talks about the same thing. So it's not like you have to be saying anything new and different. Just have somebody else saying it. So we don't, you know, we don't have to kowtow to just having one all the time and be like, oh, we got to watch this one. No, go on and have, I mean, we have on the drive in the morning, you got four or five different radio shows you can listen to in the morning on radio. Not on XM, but just on radio. You listen to Tom Joyner, you listen to Steve Harvey, you listen to Ricky Smiley, and you listen to wherever, if you're on the East Coast, Russ Park, you listen to your local person. So those sorts of things, and they, most of the time, they talk about the same thing and they playing the same music. It's like you're getting any new music on the R&B channels because they got to play the same. And the hip-hop channels is playing all the same rap music. So it's not like you're getting any different music. You're getting a different personality. That's what you're listening for.
That's true.
For the personality of the host.
That's true.
Because you're not getting it. The music is the same.
So are we more informed or less informed than 20 years ago? Now, I give you that the context of all the stuff we just talked about, the radio shows being going away and the different personalities that we do have now, even in the context of the major media streams that continue to spew the music in the way they do, even given the social media outlets and that regurgitates the information over and over again, within that context, are we more informed or less informed today?
That's hard because we have more ways to get information, but are we getting it? And then if we're getting it, what are we doing with it once we have it? So I can't. That's a hard one to answer. I don't know. On the one hand, on my left hand, I'm gonna say we're less informed because we're not making sound decisions and the judgments, and our judgment is off. And so that means that, you know, we may not have enough information. But on the other hand, you have so many ways to get news now that it's not just the 5 o'clock and 10 o'clock news local. It's cable. It's radio. It's satellite. It's so many places. It's your computer. It's so many places you can get it that, you know, we should be more informed. But I can't answer that.
So how is it then we can galvanize around a Trayvon Martin and a Jordan Davis, but we can't galvanize around a Senate bill or a House bill or some legislation that impacts our lives just as much as the two deaths of those young men? So I ask that question again, are we more informed or less informed based on our behaviors and what we do with the information? Because information, it should, you know, coerce you to act, to take a position, to do something. So at any rate, I really want to address that question. But it's time for another quick break. We're at the top of the hour right now. And when we come back, we're going to address more of that. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Be back in a moment.
Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our companies, TaylorMade Training and Consulting, Current Events, and AskSteamer, can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for discounted books for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade.com. Marketplace101.com and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Current events with Patrick Cook is joining the fight with First Lady Michelle Obama to help feed hungry children and stop childhood obesity. During the school year, many children receive free and reduced price breakfast and lunch as a result of the school breakfast and national school lunch programs. However, when the last bell sounds, marking the end of the school year, for many, it marks the beginning of hunger that will plague them throughout the summer. Here at Current Events, we're going to fill that nutrition gap and make sure children can get the nutritious meals they need. To learn how you can help with this worthy cause, go to TaylorMade101.com and click on Hunger Free. That's TaylorMade101.com and click on Hunger Free.
Thank you for your call. Let me read you a couple of my Twitter family, and then I'll have you respond, Dr. Hutchinson. But I want to read the first one from one of my best Twitter family members, Ask Jima. And Ask Jima says, Reverend Al, today is my birthday, and I'm sitting in Barnes & Noble Starbucks watching you online, driving people around me crazy. And I want to wave at her and the folks she's driving crazy and wish her a happy birthday on her 21st birthday. That's my friend. And of course, my email.
Stay tuned. We'll be back with more of Current Events with Patrick Cook. Patrick Cook.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Windsor Johnston. Ukraine's new interim president says integration with Europe will be a top priority. NPR's Peter Kenyon reports from Kiev that Washington is warning Moscow against military intervention.
After being named interim president, Oleksandr Turchynov gave lawmakers 48 hours to agree on a new government and said while he's ready for dialogue with Russia, integrating with Europe will be a top priority. As the Olympics in Sochi came to an end, all eyes here turned toward Moscow to see how Russian leader Vladimir Putin will react to losing his ally Ukrainian President Viktor Yanukovych, who says he was the victim of a coup. In Washington, National Security Advisor Susan Rice said Russian military intervention in Ukraine would be a grave mistake, and that Ukraine keeping friendly ties with Russia and moving toward integration with the EU need not be mutually exclusive goals. Peter Kenyon, NPR News, Kiev.
The president of the International Olympic Committee says athletes and spectators enjoyed exceptional conditions at the Games. Thomas Bach says he thought it was impossible for Sochi to host an Olympics when he first visited 20 years ago.
We saw an old Stalinist-style sanatorium city where whenever you entered the room, you were looking at the roof whether you would not be hit by something falling down.
Bach also praised Russian President Vladimir Putin for his personal commitment to the success of the Games. The Mexican government is celebrating the arrest of the country's number one drug trafficker. Joaquin Chapo Guzman, head of the notorious Sinaloa cartel, was captured in a Pacific resort town. NPR's Carrie Kahn reports not one shot was fired during the operation.
Authorities say they had been closing in on Chapo Guzman for months and last weekend almost got him, but he escaped from a safe house through an underground tunnel. Mexican Attorney General Jesus Murillo Caram told reporters that in the time officers struggled to open a steel door leading to the tunnel, Guzman had escaped. He was later caught in the resort hotel. Caram says U.S. officials aided in the arrest but did not give specifics. U.S. drug officials say Guzman's Sinaloa cartel is responsible for one quarter of all illegal drugs coming from Mexico, with annual profits of more than $3 billion. Analysts say it's unlikely that Guzman's capture will end the Sinaloa cartel or evoke a power struggle, since his second-in-command was not arrested and is poised to assume control of the organization. Carrie Kahn, NPR News, Mexico City.
The Afghan Taliban says they're suspending mediation with the U.S. on exchanging a captive American soldier for five Taliban prisoners at Guantanamo Bay. A Taliban spokesman says the indirect talks are being suspended because of the complexity of the political situation in Afghanistan. Sergeant Bo Bergdahl has been held by the Taliban since 2009. This is NPR News. The nation's governors are in Washington, D.C. this weekend for their annual winter meeting. Among the issues under discussion, marijuana laws. As NPR's Jim Hawk reports, Colorado's governor is advising a wait-and-see approach.
Colorado became the first state to allow legal retail sales of recreational marijuana on January 1st, and Colorado Governor John Hickenlooper said he's spoken to half a dozen governors with questions about his state's experience. But Hickenlooper urges caution, saying, quote, "We don't know what the unintended consequences are going to be." Hickenlooper confirmed that early tax revenue collections on Colorado pot sales have exceeded projections, but cautioned that tax revenue is absolutely the wrong reason to even think about legalizing recreational marijuana. The National Governors Association concludes its winter meeting with a White House dinner tonight and the governor's only meeting with President Obama Monday. Jim Hawk, NPR News, Washington.
Finance ministers from the world's 20 largest economies have agreed to implement what they're calling ambitious but realistic policies aimed at boosting global gross domestic product. Treasury Secretary Jacob Lew says it's a major step.
If you look where we were a year ago debating austerity, this was a debate about how can we work together to share best practices and develop an approach where our individual economies can grow and the global economy can hit the objective that's set forth in the communique.
The G20 is committing to increasing their combined GDP by 2% above levels expected over the next 5 years and lifting global GDP by more than $2 trillion. I'm Winter Johnston, NPR News, in Washington.
Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. I want to shift now to an article that is entitled 12 Years a Slave to be Incorporated into Public High School Curriculum. I'm not sure if you've seen this, but I would encourage you to go out to news1.org and news1.com and take a look at this article. This is a pretty good one. The award-winning film, 12 Years a Slave, a striking and brutally vivid retelling of the true story of Solomon Northrop, will be incorporated into public high school classrooms around the nation, beginning in September 2014, according to the National School Boards Association press release. The NSBA is partnering with New Regency, Penguin Books, and the filmmakers to distribute copies of the acclaimed film, book, and study guide to America's public high schools, giving students an unvarnished view of slavery in America that is seldom introduced inside the classroom. So what do you think about that? Do you think that this is appropriate content? I don't know if you got an opportunity to see it, but it is a striking account of what happened. Do you think this is appropriate? And again, this is going to be going into the public high school classrooms around the nation beginning in the fall of this year. But do you think this is something that we should be highlighting in our school system? Now some will say people are tired of seeing different versions of a black man getting beat by a white person. Some will say our history is more rich in other areas than to always being portrayed as the slave or always being portrayed as the docile or the disadvantaged one. Some will say that our history should be highlighted in other facets other than slavery. And then you'll get some that talk about, you know, keeping this particular issue alive because it is something that our we have yet to really deal with, as we indicated on this show, many, many, many times in our nation's history. It is something that we should at least consider keeping in the forefront to show people where African Americans descended from and how we came about and how the laws and how everything was structured and the impact it's currently having on our society. But at any rate, the award-winning 12 Years a Slave will be incorporated into public high school classrooms around the nation beginning September 2014. This is according to the National Schools Boards Association. Now, the initiative, coordinated by Montel Williams, is modeled against an initiative Williams launched that ultimately led to the distribution by the Montel Williams Show of copies of the Civil War film Glory to public schools. If you didn't know that, Montel Williams was instrumental in getting the Civil War film Glory into public high schools, and he's now leading the effort to get 12 Years a Slave to be also distributed. And it looks like the National School Boards Association has bought into this too as well. Now, 12 Years a Slave is one of the most impactful films in recent memory, and I am honored to have been able to bring together Fox Searchlight and National School Boards Association to maximize its educational potential. When Hollywood is at its best, the power of the movies can be harnessed into powerful educational tools. This film uniquely highlights a shameful period in American history, and in doing so, will evoke in students a desire to not repeat the evils of the past, while inspiring them to dream big of a better and brighter future. And I am proud to be a part of that. This is what Montel Williams said. Now, since first reading 12 Years a Slave, it has been his dream that he said that this is my dream that this book be taught in schools. And I am immensely grateful to Montel Williams and the National School Boards Association for making this dream a reality and for sharing Solomon Northrop's story with today's generation, says Steve McQueen. So what's your opinion about this? Should 12 Years a Slave be distributed across the nation in public high schools to give an account of African-American history or slavery in the United States? And joining me again is, of course, the co-host, Jima Hill Cook. Jima, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So what do you think about this? Should 12 Years a Slave be part of the high school curriculum nowadays?
Well, full disclosure, because I had not been ready to see the movie, I'm now ready to see it. So I'm going to see the movie and I'm going to read the book. And I think it's yet another part of our story that has laid has been untold for so long. And I'm sure for every one 12 Years a Slave, for Solomon, I'm sure there's so many more that we know nothing about. And so how can we ever say that we grow tired of the slave movie when there's so many eras to the slave? It just wasn't, I mean, I did a moment in Black History today at church, and I spoke about Sojourner Truth. In reading what I read, I learned something about a woman who I thought I knew already. I had no idea that she was such a fighter, in terms of that she even had a conductor of the train arrested and fired for violation of the law because he didn't want her to sit on the train. Now, she refused to get up from a train in 1860-something, way before Rosa didn't get off the bus. So our history is deeper than what we've only scratched the surface. So I think it would be an awesome way to just tell not only Solomon's story, but for all the Solomons out there whose story has yet to be told, and to how this could have happened. See, we only thought slavery happened because everybody came over here from Africa, and we came on in the Middle Passage, and we were brought over here.
But there were some people that were here already and were free. And Solomon's story tells us how their freedom was tricked and taken away from them, you know. And so that gives a whole nother spin on the mindset of slave owners and how determined they were to keep people in bondage and to keep people enslaved, that they had to trick them and lie to them and take them away from their own environment. This is a lot about the slave owner, you know, and that's what they don't want. That's the story they don't want told. It's not the slave story. It's the story of the slave owner. But because to tell the slave story, you have to tell the story of the slave owner. You have to. And that's what they don't want us to know, is how bad it really was. It was bad because whenever a one person's livelihood and dignity is stripped of them, and then it's and how it's stripped of them, it speaks to the people that is doing the stripping as well. It speaks to them as well.
Okay. Yeah, I get that. What do you say to the people, though, that says we have a lot more, there's a lot more to our story than just slavery? There's a lot more to our story than the Middle Passage. There's a lot more to what we are, who we are, what we have become, than just that depiction that's illustrated all over the country all the time. You know, when I look at Black History Month, and I look at the fact, when I go to the library, when I see the billboards, when I hear people talk about history in the effect of how we were enslaved, how we were beaten, how we were able to overcome this and that, I think that's all good to keep it in proper context. But are there not any good stories out there of our history? There's not anything good that positive that doesn't necessarily depict us in a negative light or more of a servant light? Is there something better about our story that can be told?
Every story of success comes out of, in my opinion, for us as a race of people, comes out of story of struggle. And if you go back to the Bible, and for those that made it, that crossed the Red Sea, and Moses was instructed to tell them to place 12 stones at the bottom. And the people were like, why do we need to put the bottom? Nobody's going to see that. Nobody's ever going to be able to walk down on that dry land again. So why would we do that? And you place the 12 stones to remind you of how you walked on that dry land to get to the other side. So you tell the story of your history to remind you how you got to where you are. So for the person now, for the LeBron Jameses of the world to be able to have free agency, they need to know about the ones that came before them. They need to know about Oscar Robinson and what he did to ensure that a player has a right to go out and do what it is he's trying to accomplish. They need to know. And if nobody ever tells them, then for some reason they might get into their mind that they've gotten here on their own some kind of way. And we don't want to confuse them like that. So you
okay,
have to keep the story connected. And so, yeah, there's more than just story of slavery. That there is more than that. But I don't ever want to stop telling the story because, see, they've already tried to marginalize it as if it wasn't that bad. They already tried to say blacks were better under slavery than they are now. And so if we stop telling the story, then we're saying we buy into the notion, you're right, we were better. Or slavery wasn't that bad. And I refuse to allow that to happen. So we can tell, it's not an either or, it's an and. You tell the whole story. But to tell the whole story, you got to go back to the beginning. You can't just talk about the children of Israel being in the promised land and not talk about how they got out of slavery. not talk about Pharaoh, not talk about the plague, not talk about what they did once they did get over and how Moses had to come down off the mountain. You just can't talk about the promised land part and not talk about where they came from. So how can we just want to talk about the Oprahs of the world or the Tyler Perrys of the world or the Bill Russells or the Bill Cosbys or the Mae Jamesons of the world? How do we just want to talk about them, the Booker T's of the world, but we don't want to talk about who was there before them? You can't do that. You cannot disconnect the story. And that has been the problem, is that we allow so many other people to tell our story that they've cut out what they didn't deem to be as important. Because there's no way. You cannot tell me, if you were not a historian, a literary buff, that you knew anything about Solomon Northup. You can't tell me you did. No way you knew this was a true story. No way. Because you've never heard it before. 45 years old, I never heard this story before. Never. So you cannot discount my past. You cannot take away what happened in the beginning. I am grateful. I am thankful. I get emotional about it. I get passionate about it because I cannot sit on the bus and then act like I don't have to think about now. And now I'm thinking about Sojourner, not just Rosa and all of them. And not just the people in Montgomery that stopped riding the bus for over a year, that walked to work. It was not convenient, but they walked to work because they stood for something. When will we stand for something that we will allow ourselves convenience and uncomfortable? Where we will allow ourselves to feel the burden of what it means to be kicked to the side? We want everything, and we want it now, and we fail to look back at how we got to the promised land, but we're here, and we're just looking for the milk and honey. But we don't want to work, and we don't want to remember how we got here. So, no, I'm not okay with not talking about it anymore because that's how I'm still here. I'm still here because I'm part of the group that survived. And so because my ancestors survived, I have to be able to tell their story. I would be doing them an injustice if I allow my story not to be told in its totality, and I'm not doing that.
Right, I hear you. So you got a good point. We should always keep it in the forefront.
It's been a long,
yeah, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll return. We're going to continue the conversation on current events with Patrick Cook. We'll be back in a moment.
Oh, yes, it will. It's been too.
You are listening to Kanye Britain with Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas. My mom and my dad will be right back after these messages.
Cook Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our companies, Tailor-Made Training and Consulting, Current Events, and Ask Fukushima can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for discounted books for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Thank you for your call. Let me read you a couple of my Twitter family, and then I'll have you respond, Dr. Hutchinson. But I want to read the first one from one of my best Twitter family members, Ask Jima. And Ask Jima says, Reverend Al, today is my birthday, and I'm sitting in Barnes & Noble Starbucks watching you online, driving people around me crazy. And I want to wave at her and the folks she's driving crazy and wish her a happy birthday on her 21st birthday. That's my friend. And of course, my Eastbourne friend.
Need a new website? Haven't figured out your social media strategy? Are you finally ready to tweet, post, or blog? Well, look no further. Go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. We are the number one resource for small businesses and nonprofits. We're a full service, interactive consulting firm specializing in social media marketing, web design, technology workshops, as well as leadership and management training. So go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. Google me.
Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number of the call is 323-580-5712. Again, the number is 323-580-5712. I want to shift now to a story that's been in the news for several weeks and just recently reached a pinnacle with the verdict of Michael Dunn being found not guilty on the major count and guilty on some lesser accounts. But, you know, we talked about the verdict, and I want to now shift to the jurors, specifically Krishna Miles, appeared to be an African-American. I can't really tell for sure, but she appeared to be an African-American female. You can never be for sure of these things, but the appearance. And there was an article that I want to read. I want to kind of discuss her opinion about the trial, or her judgment per se, of what happened. So I want to kind of talk to that a little bit. And so the article says, and this is from Clutch Magazine Online, and it says, I have a hard time believing a person named Krishna Miles, who rocks a hairstyle that gives you Wiz Khalifa the early years, doesn't know about bias, notably those related to race. That's not a diss to Krishna, merely a reminder that if no other group on earth knows what it's like to be prejudged based on the superficial, it is black folks. So like the parents of Jordan Davis, I initially found it a bit disingenuous for her to dismiss the role race played in the shooting death of Davis at the hands of Michael Dunn, a.k.a. the person who keeps euphemisms like thug music in his arsenal, along with other dangerous weaponry. As previously reported, when asked about those who feel race played a key role in Davis's death, Krishna argued, I never once thought about, this was a black kid, this was a white guy, because that wasn't the case. She went on to say that those feel otherwise ought to acknowledge themselves on the law. God bless her, or whatever, but the phrase knowledge themselves speaks volumes. So, Jim, I want to raise the question to you. What was Krishna Miles thinking when she made the statement about this black kid and this white kid, and this wasn't the case. She didn't believe that race played a role. And then I want to know what she meant by knowledge themselves on the law.
Well, we know for sure, as in the, this is the second profile case, and we talked about it, that the state of Florida has failed to get a conviction on with Stand Your Ground in terms of the prosecutors. They did not do, in my opinion, a well enough job in explaining the case, and they didn't bring race up either. So it was difficult for the jury to infer race when it was never brought up as an issue. The problem with that, though, is that for any common sense person and any person with any kind of gumption to them, if you find that the person, the white person, was offended by the music, by calling it thug music, that in itself brings up race. Because if they were listening to, oh, Justin Bieber, would he have said thug music? Well, I don't know, maybe. If they were listening to Elton John, if they were listening to some, you know, country group or some rock group, would he have called it thug music? So that in itself, the music and how he described it in itself, places race into the scenario. Had it been a group of white boys in the car listening to the exact same music, would he have called it thug music? Would he have asked them to turn it down? We don't know. What we do know is that he decided to take into his own hands and to take a life away because of the music when there were so many other things he could have done. And for her and for that jury not to realize that at no point was he ever in danger because there was never a weapon, that part is what baffles me. There was never a weapon except for the one he created in his mind. And so at no point did he need to stand his ground because no one was trying to do anything to him. No one got out of the car. No one shot at him. No one brandished any weapon at him. And yet he felt for his life because there was four black young men in a vehicle listening to some loud music. And that's not race.
The problem with me with this law is that what you just said, the fact that someone in their mind can say, I feel threatened, or I think this guy is going to do something to me, then I can willfully pull out my gun and kill him. And so that's unnerving, to say the least, because if you piss me off and I go out to you and say, I think you have a gun and I can shoot you, then I'm justified in it. You know, for example, If we're all going to the gas station and you get in line, you park in my spot, and I see you parking in, I think that's my spot. You get there before me. I get mad at you, get out the car and says, hey, you got my spot. I get out the car and you willfully say, I thought he was going to get out the car to harm me, so I shot him. Or you're going in and you I mean, there's a number of different scenarios. I don't have to play them all out here. But because the law is written in such a manner, that just leaves the door open for anyone to go up and shoot anybody, because now there's precedence for it. And because the precedent has been set with George Zimmerman and now Michael Dunn, it goes to reason, it stands to reason that one could do this for an infinite number of cases in the future.
Well, but the sad part about it is that we don't have to wait on the future. We can just go and look at the data that's already there. I can't believe, I can't remember the exact statistics, but in watching, I think it was Griffin Al's show this week or somebody's show this week on MSNBC, and they listed the statistics and the data around the states that have enacted some sort of stand your ground and how that number of justifiable homicides have increased substantially over the period of time that they've had this law in place. And so now, because of it, you have more people feeling justified in taking someone's life because of how this law is written and how it is being carried out in our criminal justice system. And on the flip side of that, you have more people, I haven't figured out what the initial intent of the law was to do. I don't know if it was to cut down on violence, I don't know if they've had what the data shows on that. I'm sure somebody has it. I haven't researched it to find out. But you know what has the impact been on violence in the community since this law has been enacted? And then the third part of that is, from the data, it is already shown that it disproportionately affects black victims and black defendants more than it does white people. And that's just the facts just show that. I mean, you have three cases, and in these three cases, and just in Florida alone, we're not even talking about nowhere else, but just the three cases that we know about in Florida, with Michael Dunn, with George Zimmerman, and with Marissa Alexander. And you have those two who shot and killed a young black person, and neither one of them are serving time for that crime. And you have Marissa Alexander, who shot a warning shot, not even at anybody, and she gets 20 years. So just those three alone should give you pause as to the legitimacy of this law and whether or not it's doing whatever who crafted it wanted it to do. I don't know. I can't answer that.
You know, I wonder how different this is from lynching back in the early 18 or late 1800s, early 1900s. And I'm saying that because if a white person found an African American or black or Negro back in that era guilty of some crime that they seen that was a crime back then or something that was wrong, they would hang him. They would do a public hanging of him, and they would be justified in doing so. So if I'm liking that to a situation now, a white person sees a guy walking down the street with Skittles in something in his hand or soda in his hand, playing loud music, another stereotypical depiction of an African-American, walking around with a hoodie on, another stereotypical depiction of an African-American young male. Then how is it different from the lynching that happened back in the day? I just don't see any different. I see there's a strong correlation between how they were treating blacks then and how they have been treated, particularly in these last two cases in Florida, when a person takes the justice in their own hand. He's the judge, the jury, and everything else, and the executioner when it comes to killing a black man. So, Jimmy, do you see any differences there, or am I stretching this?
Well, I don't necessarily know if it's differences, but I would also say the reverse is true. You go back in time and you look at the amount of times that a white jury was summoned to try a white person that was found to have been sitting tried for killing a black person, and how many times that person was acquitted or found not guilty. Although all the evidence showed you that they did it, but the white jury said, no, they did not. So the reverse is true of that as well. So we're living in that time all over again where justice is not being fair. She's not blind right now. And those that are sworn to protect the people are not protecting the people. And so we have to go back. And the thing about this goes back to our previous conversation about remembering the past. So you can't all of a sudden want to remember lynching, but you don't want to remember the boat. You don't want to remember slavery. You can't parcel out parts of history that's comfortable for you. You got to take a look at all of it, and you got to make sense because, as Scripture says, there's nothing new under the sun. So what we're dealing with now is nothing new. There's just a new way that people are doing it. So now a law is on the books that allows people to be able to say they're standing their ground because they thought they were an imminent threat of their own lives. And because I thought it for that moment in time, I'm right until somebody can prove that I wasn't an imminent danger. But until that happens, I'm right. So So I get to make the decision based on what I understand the law to be, and so I just go out and I do it. Now, the problem is going to be, you know, and this has been the question that has been posed. So let's say I'm at the gas station, and you as a white person or some other person is got Rush Limbaugh blaring and all the crazy nonsense coming out of his mouth, and I ask you to turn it down, and you decide you want to cuss me out because I asked you to turn it down. Well, I'm in the state of Texas. The state of Texas has some kind of stand your ground as well. Well, I see you going to reach down, and you, I don't know what you're reaching for, but because we just had this exchange about Rush Limbaugh and me asking you to turn it down and you not, and then you reaching, I think you're reaching for something, so I'm just going to shoot you. There we are.
That's it.
That's where we are.
I have to agree with you once again. All right, we're going to take another quick break. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Be back in a moment.
Cook Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our companies, Tailor Made Training and Consulting, Current Events, and Ask Jima, can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for a discounted book for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Current Events with Patrick Cook is joining the fight with First Lady Michelle Obama to help feed hungry children and stop childhood obesity. During the school year, many children receive free and reduced price breakfast and lunch as a result of the school breakfast and national school lunch programs. However, when the last bell sounds, marking the end of the school year, for many, it marks the beginning of hunger that will plague them throughout the summer. Here at Current Events, we're going to fill that nutrition gap and make sure children can get the nutritious meals they need. To learn how you can help with this worthy cause, go to TaylorMade101.com and click on Hunger Free. Free. That's TaylorMade101.com and click on Hunger Free.
Thank you for your call. Let me read you a couple of my Twitter family, and then I'll have you respond, Dr. Hutchinson. But I want to read the first one from one of my best Twitter family members, Ask Jima. And Ask Jima says, Reverend Al, today is my birthday, and I'm sitting in Barnes & Noble Starbucks watching you online, driving people around me crazy, and I want to wave at her and the folks she's driving crazy and wish her a happy birthday on her 21st birthday. That's my friend, and of course, my
stay tuned. We'll be back with more of Current Events with Patrick Cook.
Patrick Cook.
Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number of the call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. Okay, so Jima, we were talking about basically the lynchings that are taking place, and the fact that we have this young lady who said basically that it was not race involved in the Michael Dunn's verdict, and there have been different opinions about who she is and what she stands for. But I want to talk a little bit about the jury selection. How is it that we keep getting jurors that sees the case through the non-racial lens? What is it in America that could shield a person from not seeing this, Jima?
Well, if your environment is one of such where you buy into the notion of good and evil, black and white, right and wrong, that you buy into stereotypes about people, that you believe that, you know, certain people are capable. You believe that listening to music, a certain type of music, is going to make you act a certain type of way. So because you do that and you believe that, then that's how, you know, then that's your frame of reference, you know. And we all have our own biases. We can't play like we don't. We're supposed to check them at the door during jury duty, but, you know, it's a part of who we are. I think the other reason why we get these type of people, because everybody isn't registered to vote, and you get pulled for jury duty based on voter registration. So if you want to have an impact on the outcome of these juries, then you need to be available. When you get the call, you need to respond and say, yes, I'll go. You can't abstain from your duty as a citizen, and then when you living in the community and all these things are happening and you're trying to figure out, well, what can I do? You can go be in the jury pool. You know, but, you know, that people don't want to do that. People don't want to exercise that civic duty that we have, but yet we want to sit on the sidelines and talk about those that do accept it. You know, and the prosecutor and defense attorneys, you know, they interview the jurors. They know who they want on their jury up there on the jury stand. The people that will probably be a little bit more affirmative for their particular side. And so, you know, we cannot make assumptions about why people respond the way that they do, except for their own environment. We're products of our environment, and I carry with me, and this, I'm about to sound like a broken record here, but I carry with me not only my present but my past. So although it may have been 10 years or so that I may have personally experienced any sort of racial discrimination, that does not negate the 20 years before that I've seen it up close and personal. You know, it doesn't go away because I'm no longer in that environment where it happens all the time. And so it's still a part of who I am. And so in my life, I've never seen it, or, you know, I've only seen it from afar and from a distance, and I've never seen it up close, but I'm not going to believe that, you know, it's as prevalent as people make it out. And if my own interactions with people of different races has been one of hostility, has been one of confrontation, then I'm going to believe that that's how all of them are. And so I go into that jury room with all of that in me and with all of that, and then I'm presented a case, you know, sometimes presented very well on both sides, where I really have to think, and sometimes one side does a better job and makes my job easy. But either way, I go in with who I am and my totality. I don't leave half of me out of the jury room. I go in there whole. And that's what you get.
Do you think that the generation Xers or the generation Yers has been talked about a lot, that they have a higher propensity to be kind of blended racially, their environments that they grow up in, the fact that it's less vitriol sprued at each other, they play together more, there are more interracial relationships as a part of their environment. So her age group sees a lot of cross-pollination of cultures. Do you think her age had anything to do with how she viewed the case?
Possibly. For the short answer to that, I would say yes. It probably did, for all the reasons that you listed and we've talked about before. So, you know, the downside of that is that whatever environment she's from, failed her to keep her connected to what has sustained her through this, that has allowed her to grow up in that type of cross-pollination integrated world. What she's lacking is a sense of history and recognition of, you know, things that, that could be, not that they all are, but just the possibility. So for her to just state that race never came up, how could it not? I mean, I just can't wrap my head around that. How could it not?
So we only have a few more minutes remaining in the show. I want to get your take on another topic, the NCAA Image Awards. Were you able to view them, and what was your take on them?
I did view them, and I enjoyed them. I think they did a really good job of embracing and empowering and recognizing those African Americans that have done well on film and on the small screen on television. I think the unfortunate part of it being just 2 hours, I think if they go to 3 hours, we get to see more people that did win awards. There were so many things that happened the night before at the pre-award show that awards were given out that we didn't get to see all of them, and I think they might can improve on that. I think the moving tribute that Oprah did to Nelson Mandela was awesome. And I think the highlight for me was Oprah. The highlight for me was Forrest Whitaker getting the Chairman's Award and just the sheer eloquence of how he spoke, which he always does it anyway, but just how he spoke about what we have to do and what's important of how we have to be able to give back in more ways than just money, but of our time and of ourselves. And I thought that was that was impressive to see. And the fact that we really, you know, this was probably a hard year in terms of the amount of good movies that we had. The top five that was up for the movies of the year was 12 Years a Slave, The Best Man Holiday, Fruitvale Station, Lee Daniels, The Butler, and there's one more I'm missing. But those were good movies all around. And you had three of those were a historical, and A Long Walk to Freedom for Nelson Mandela. So you have four of those that were true stories, Nelson Mandela's life. You have Solomon Northwood's life and 12 Years a Slave. You have pieces of the butler, his name escapes me right now, but pieces of his life in that story. And so you know, and Fruitvale Station was about Oscar Grant, the young man that was killed out in San Francisco. And so they wasn't just movies. They were somebody, those were real people. You know, and so we did a really good job this year of telling our story. And so, you know, there's more and to us than just that. I mean, those were the ones that captured us. But, you know, when you look at and Kevin Hart was Entertainer of the Year, and you got to give him credit because Kevin Hart been in like 12,000 movies this year. And he had more to come. And so
no doubt.
It's like he got a movie opening every 2 weeks. You know, and so you look at that and the fact that we're in those different types of movies. And so I think it was good. I think they could probably, if they do anything different, they could increase the time to get us to see more of the people that won, but also maybe splash in a little bit more entertainment. I think the only live entertainment was Stevie Wonder's. And his was part of the tribute to Nelson Mandela. Now, it was good. Don't misunderstand me. I appreciate it. But I think if maybe in the gospel category or something, because we didn't get to see that at all. That was all the previous night. But I thought it was excellent put together. Anthony Anderson was the host, and he did an amazing job. And it was good to see and hear the women and men recognize. And earlier in the week, Roland Martin had spoken with Monique, and she talked about the importance of the Image Awards, and that it solidified some things for her that the Oscar didn't. She said the Image Award gave her, increased her salary as related to when she was doing the Parkers. And she really hasn't worked really on a major movie in 5 years, and she won the Oscar. And so here we are 5 years later, and we're like, well, where is Monique? And so that tells you, you know, something about winning the Oscar and winning some of these other things for us as African Americans. And so we have to still embrace ourselves and embrace one another and empower. And when the movies come out, we have to go and see them. And I think we've been doing a lot better job of that over these last couple of years and really going out in high numbers. When you can have a Kevin Hart and Ice Cube movie be the number one movie on opening weekend, 2 weekends in a row, as a comedy, you've done something. And then for Kevin Hart to come back, you know, a couple of weeks later with About Last Night, and for that to, you know, for him to have two of the top movies in the top five in the weekend says something. And that's because our movies is like everybody else's movies. You know, we have a story to tell just like everybody else, and people want to hear that story. And so we should make it available for them to hear it.
Wonderful. I want to take a pause to talk about an event that's happening each and every Sunday. Speakeasy Sundays. Give me the mic each and every Sunday, calling all poets, lyricists, comedians, musicians, and singers, or any other musical talent. Come and share your craft with the DFW at Smoking Racks Bar and Grill. That's 621 West Plano Parkway, Suite 247, Plano, Texas, 75075. Doors will open at 6 p.m. Again, that's at Smoking Racks Bar and Grill, 621 West Plano Parkway, Suite 247 in Plano, Texas, at 75075. Doors will open at 7 p.m. Okay, Jim, what are your final thoughts?
My final thought is just as one of remembrance, and you know, my challenge to people is to go out and do some research. But we can talk about, you know, when we talk about our past and our history as a country and things that we people do now just thinking it's always been that way. It hasn't always been that way. And one of the things when you talk about sports and Oscar Robinson, you need to also look up Spencer Haywood, because he was one of the first to want to leave college and go play in the pros early, and the fight he had to fight in order to make that happen, as well as Kirk Flood, who was one of the ones that was instrumental in free agency. And so when you look at your players being able to move around, they're able to move around because of those that came before them. And so that's why I say it's important that we don't forget the past. I'm not saying we live in it, but we definitely need to recognize it and understand it, and we need to embrace it for all that it means. We need to embrace it. And when we fail to do that, we do ourselves a disservice in the present, because if we don't learn from the past, we're doomed to repeat it. And so we need to make sure that when this is primary season here in the state of Texas, you have a lot of people that's up for judges, and you need to know who these people are that you're voting for. You have superintendents that are doing things in your school district. You need to know what they're doing. You need to go to those PTA meetings and start asking some questions, and you need to go to those school board meetings and start asking some questions. You can't go to the meeting. Every local station has a channel where they show school board meetings and city council meetings. And so find yourself, instead of watching something that has no impact on your life, find yourself the channel and get updated on what's happening. And then my final thought is that as we're nearing into the spring season, you know, begin to think about those who will not have food in the next coming months because they'll be out of food. And what can you do to impact that? What can you do to help that child who may go hungry because of lack of resources?
All right, well said. We appreciate that. And then to add to what you're just talking about, you can always go to TaylorMade101.com and click on Hunger Free. TaylorMade101.com and click on Hunger Free and join our cause when it comes to feeding hungry kids out of school. All Well, that's our show for today. Now, I'd like to thank all the listeners for tuning in. And, of course, a special thanks to my co-host, the wonderful, the magnificent, Jima Hill Cook. Now, you can follow her on Twitter, and that's at AskJima. That's AskJema. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. I'm your host, Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Talis, Texas, as I do every Sunday at 4 p.m. Central Time, 5 o'clock Eastern. Now, we are the number one resource for small business and nonprofits. Now, don't forget to bookmark this site and visit my blog at TaylorMadeTalkRadio.blogspot.com. That's TaylorMade Talk Radio, all one word, .blogspot.com. Until next time, remember it is written, my people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge. So stay engaged, stay informed, and stay plugged in to Current Events with Patrick Cook. You're listening to the sounds of my buddy, Joyce Spencer, in Sweet Dreams. Take us away, Joyce.